All right. In all seriousness, although it's not that serious an interview, what made you decide to start the Sunflower? Where'd you come up with the name Sunflower?
That's you.
Yeah, that was tough. We had a really hard time thinking of a name, and we had applied to the Landmark Commission for the permit to open at the original location at 16th and Church. And one of the specifications for the application was that we had to have a name for the business. And we had the idea for the business, and we knew what we wanted to do, but we didn't have a name. And we just thought and thought, and then all of a sudden it just popped in my head one day that Sunflower was a nice name that was easy to remember and that was recognizable.
From Minnesota,
and,
too.
And yeah, from so that's where it came from.
The Sunflower State.
Yeah.
Cool. So tell me about the early days. What was it like trying to get this place open?
Well, what struggles? We hired a couple of people to help us, and that kind of didn't work out. And we had to remodel the whole inside because the store had been, it was an old grocery store, corner store, and it had been closed for I don't know how many years, a long time.
And it didn't have a kitchen.
It didn't have a kitchen. There was no gas to the building, so we could only use a steam kettle and a soup crock pot.
So that probably segues into the next story. Tell me about your famous soup.
The tomato basil soup. My mother used to make this soup when we were kids, and it was tomato basil soup, but she used to use some weird concoction of baking soda, and she'd mix it with the tomatoes to take the acid out and then put milk in it. And if you use cream, it doesn't curdle. So you don't need the baking soda or any of that stuff. We just started making it as a soup of the day, and pretty soon everybody started asking for it. So that was our only soup.
But you had been making it at Fisherman's Wharf.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
As a seafood bisque. It was the base of a seafood.
I used to make it
fish
and put in
shrimp.
Shrimp,
yeah.
And fish and, you know, whatever other seafood we would have, and sell that as a seafood bisque. So then we just took all the seafood out, and, you know, that was it.
So you made it better by taking something away.
Yeah.
That's always a good
put
thing.
Basil.
Made it easier and better.
You made it less expensive, too.
Now it's legendary.
Yeah, seafood bisque was pretty pricey, but tomato basil, not so much.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So in the early days, were you, I think, you told me originally you just wanted to be a bakery, right?
Our original idea was that it would be a bakery. And then what happened was that we had hired two young guys to do the construction remodel part for us. And Harry was still working a job. He had a paying job because somebody had to make a living. And so I would stay there all day with these construction guys and run errands for them and do things. There was nowhere to get something for lunch. And at that time, all there was around there was the Whataburger on University Boulevard. And other than that, there just wasn't really any selection for anything. And so one day Harry said, maybe we need to make sandwiches since we're going to make bread anyway. So we thought, yeah, we probably do because there's just nowhere to even get a sandwich around here. And when we were spending the days there, we would just count the cars driving by on Church Street. And because of the proximity to the hospital, it was just this endless stream of traffic driving by there, which was one of the reasons we had picked that location anyway. So we thought, maybe we just need to make a few cold sandwiches. And then after we opened, before we knew it, there was a line of people standing out the door on the sidewalk to get a sandwich. So,
yeah, our first day in business, we did $86.
No.
And I thought,
and we were thrilled.
We can make it on this. We can make it on this.
We can do this.
So it's safe to say it was a good idea, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Good. All right. I know that you guys lost a lot in Hurricane Ike. I also know there was some interesting things that happened along the way. What was your first impression when you came back and saw the damage that had been done?
It was unbelievable. The place had 6 feet of water in it for 2 days, and everything just stewed around. And then when the water drained out, it was just mud, and everything was covered with mold. It was
all the food awful. Was rotten.
There was
spoiled.
Ice chests full of fish and chicken, and it was the most disgusting thing. We couldn't figure out what to do with it. The city said, just throw it all out in the street. So they came by with bulldozers and dragged it away.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of, you guys lost a lot.
All the equipment, everything in the restaurant
everything
was replaced.
Inside, yeah.
From the only thing that's original there is the ceiling and the floor. They tore it all the way down to the studs and rebuilt it.
That's crazy.
Wasn't that when y'all were just getting ready to start that, open up the new location? Didn't Ike hit?
No, that was Rita. Ike was after we'd been open for 2 years.
Yeah. We opened in 2006 and Ike was 2008.
Yeah.
And we were barely getting rolling. We were just starting to catch on and everything was starting to get busy and wham.
It was all gone. All gone.
I'm sure you have a few interesting stories. I know I've heard a couple of interesting stories about the time.
The money story.
The money laundering story.
When we first decided we had to evacuate, everybody, we gave away all the food that was in the restaurant, like all the
bakery
stuff.
Yeah.
We gave away a whole oven full of rotisserie chickens, which was about 25 or 30 chickens. That we had a fresh batch on the oven for dinner because we went on Facebook and said, we're going to stay open no matter what. We'll be here. And then 10 minutes later, we closed because it was
But by then it was a mandatory evacuation. Yeah. So everyone had to leave. Yeah.
And so Lisa got all of her stuff and she headed to the house to get ready. And I was going to meet her there, and I got the bakery van, and I went around and I collected all the money, all the change out of the registers and all the money from the safe and all of that. And I stuffed it all into, I can't even remember what it was.
A bank bag.
Oh, it was in a bank bag, yeah.
Yeah.
And put it in the van, and I was on my way home, and I decided to stop at the 7-Eleven and grab a soda. So I got that, and in the meantime, I shoved the bag behind the seat so that it wouldn't, no one would see it. When I got home, we were all busy and crazy, and I forgot about all that, so I unloaded the van, loaded it all into our car, and we left, and the money was still in the van.
In the driveway of our car.
In the driveway of our house.
Of our house, yeah.
And we got about halfway to Austin. And fortunately, we missed the big traffic jam. And we got about halfway to Austin, and we stopped for gas. And I said, where's the money? And I had no idea where I left. I couldn't remember at all. So there was a guy who was going to clean up for us and help. He stayed on the island. And I called him, and he said, okay, as soon as the storm's over, I'll go in there and look around for it. And he went through the whole place, and he couldn't find anything anywhere. And I was like, God, there was over, that was probably $3,000 or $4,000 in that bag in bills. But when the water came up around our house, the bag, I went through that van about 6 or 8 times. I looked up and down toward the floorboard, tore it apart. I couldn't find it anywhere. And so I said, I guess that's it. We're out that money. And then they were hauling the van up onto the flatbed to get rid of it because the insurance companies totaled it,
yeah.
And I said, let me stop. I said, let me look one more time. And this time I had to go in on the passenger side. And when I opened the passenger side door, the money had floated up behind the car seat. And then it swelled up. And then when the water receded, the money stayed up there. So
it was stuck.
It was stuck. So I grabbed it down. And I was like, and the driver was like, I said, there's a lot of money. So I took it in the house and I threw it in a washing machine and I washed it and dried it. And we
put
it
in the dryer.
And I put it in the dryer. And we had this gigantic laundry basket full of fluffy bills. It was just like, oh, I used to have a picture of it and I don't know where those pictures went. But
and then the kids flattened it out.
But there's still a $50 bill. A stack of 51s was about that thick.
But we found it.
That's how your second business started.
That's right.
The Blair money laundering scheme.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So after that storm, obviously, it's funny now, but I'm sure it really devastated you guys to see that.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about not starting?
No.
Just like giving up?
No.
We never had a choice. We
didn't have
much
choice, yeah. Plus, we were really lucky because there were so many people on the island who lost their home and their business. And we were very lucky because our home was okay. Our home had come within inches of being flooded, but it hadn't flooded. And so we still had our house, which made a big difference, as opposed to the people who just lost everything.
And when we got open in 3 months, yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, we opened right before Christmas. We reopened like on December 20th. It was just days before Christmas. But we had to really hustle to do that. And then our landlords, because they were construction contractors, they had been able to come in and do the rebuilding work really quick. So
they gave us priority because we didn't have to pay rent until the place was open.
That helps.
Yeah. That helps. So anyway, so then when we reopened, there was only other restaurant that on the island was open, I think, was The Spot. And they never closed. They stayed open through the whole thing. And it was just busy. There was construction people everywhere. And we didn't have
kitchens in their houses, so they were always looking for a decent meal. So we beat the rush to get back open. Yeah.
And it took forever to get the insurance money back, to get all the equipment put back in the place. But we finally managed to get all that stuff together.
Yeah, over time we got it pieced back together.
Yep.
That's amazing. It's a family business. It's a family legacy. What do you think about making it 25 years and counting? Now you have Zach in there. And think about the fact that you actually literally draw people from across the world who come for Sunflower. How does that feel when you start a business just because you, in Harry's words, you needed a job?
That's exactly why we did it.
That's why most people do it. Let's be honest. We all need work. But what do you think about that legacy? It's got to feel good to know that you've affected that many people. Yeah. Or do you think about that?
We get reminded of it. It's like when we first moved here to Colorado, I was at the Denver airport flying back to the Sunflower to wrap up a few things. And I was in one of the food concessions at the Denver airport. And I ordered this salad. I can't remember what it was. And it was really good. And I told the waitress, I said, man, this is a great salad. It was really good. She goes, oh, yeah. I said, and I know because I own a restaurant and I know good food. And the lady sitting next to me said, oh, what restaurant do you own? I said, it's in Texas, in Galveston. She goes, oh, I get down there. What is it? I said, it's a Sunflower Bakery. She goes, I love that place. And this was in the Denver airport.
Yeah. That's amazing. Doing your social media, we see comments literally in other languages where people are talking about they want to come down. We see it from, there's literally a worldwide audience for your brand. It's got to feel good.
Yeah.
It does.
To have that vision.
It does.
Yes, it does. And it's nice in Galveston to have such a great local clientele and so many people that we know, who people who are customers who are now friends. And it's just great that people feel so at home there, and it's just a nice familiar place for people to go. We have people who come in every day, and it's just nice to know that they're so comfortable there and that what they're getting is good enough that they come back again and again.
And the good thing about it is, we had an employer who told me once, you better never open your own restaurant because you'll never make it. You, sir, your food is, you use way too expensive stuff. You'll never make it.
So funny. Never tell Harry Blair he can't do something.
And the way we always did it was, we used the absolute best ingredients we could. We didn't worry about getting rich. Like I said, all we needed was a job that paid us. We paid ourselves a salary, and so we always had that. And then we put everything else into the business, and it slowly but surely paid off. It built a real solid foundation.
Yeah. And we always worked. We worked side by side with our employees, teaching them and training them. And we were in the kitchen every single day, all day. And that makes a big difference. There's a big difference between phoning it in and just being back there showing someone exactly how to make a pie crust or exactly how to make a soup. Or so they learned from us, and now they know how to do it without us being there, which is the best part.
That's a perfect segue into the next thing I wanted to bring up, which is the legacy continues, right? Zach's running the restaurant.
It sure does.
Frank in there as a manager. I know you guys say you're retired, but I see you working all the time, so you haven't fooled me there. But I know that you're working a lot less than the 12 hours a day, 7 days a week that you used to. What do you think about the legacy that you're leaving behind? And also, what's new that might be coming up? Are there any surprises we could talk about?
Well, they have their own ways, and they're doing a great job. Now we measure it by the metrics and the numbers as opposed to being there with customers face to face. But they do a great job, and we have a great team there between Zachary and Manuela, who runs our office, and Frank Perez, our general manager, who does a great job, and Carlos, our chef, who's been with us for a really long time. And anyone who comes in there knows that we have wait staff who have been with us for 15 and some almost 20 years.
Fantastic. And I think, Harry, you were hinting that you might have some breaking news about something new at the Sunflower, right?
Yeah, we're going to start to serve breakfast all day from 7 until 5.
Fantastic. People are going to love that.
Yeah, I think it's gonna work out good.
That's great. So you can get anything that you want at the Sunflower, basically.
Anything
any
you want.
Any breakfast you want all day long.
Any breakfast you want all day long. Any meals you want all day long.
Fantastic.
Then we found this fantastic marketing team one day who just
keep rolling.
Who just came tripping in and said, "Hey, we."
Who have just blown us up on social media.
And we said, "I don't know. That's pretty shaky."
I don't know. We've got these Tibetan monks doing our social media now. So
yeah,
the Funky Monk website.
Was good for its time.
That's right.
Very cool. All right. I appreciate you guys letting me torture you a little bit. Luckily, you're my friend, so you have to put up with me. But... All right.